Coming to you direct from the nerve center of the galaxy's greatest comic. This is the 2000 AD Thrillcast.
Alright, thung, athletes, and welcome to this episode of the 2000 AD Thrillcast. I am your host, Mulchar, and well, the nights are drawing in, are they not? So we're here to hopefully warm you up a little bit with some 2000 AD chat. You may well have seen that the 2000 AD Encyclopedia is out in time for our 45th anniversary in February. On this episode, we talked to Scott Montgomery, who is the writer who has dived into the archive to bring you all the kit and caboodle of 4.5 decades of the galaxy's greatest comic, all the way from RNA Aardvark to Zombo and everything in between. It's an absolute beast of a book. It's been serialized in the supplements that came with the Joseph Stone magazine over a number of months, and feedback on those has been great. It's being collated and updated in a new hardcover, which you can pre-order now from 2000ad.com, as well as all comic book stores and bookstores as well. Wherever you get books, you can order this. So it's great to chat to Scott about that. We also just got a brief teaser for this weekend, because it's Thought Bubble. The first Thought Bubble after COVID, the first Thought Bubble after last year's event went wholly online. The 2080 is not there. We donated our tables. Hopefully we'll be there next year, depending on what happens. But in the meantime, we decided to do the talent search panels online again. Just because the format works really well. You know, last year we picked two very worthy winners, and I liked, and we had a lot of feedback that said people liked how we did the whole thing on online. Also, it broadens out the number of people who can enter, because you don't have to come to Thought Bubble to actually take part. So we've got Leanna Kangas, Doug Braithwaite, Olivia Hicks on the art judging panel. And then we've got Maura McHugh, Ram V, and Oliver Pickles, who are the judges on the script panel. So got a brief bit just as a teaser for this weekend. Tune into the Thought Bubble Festival's YouTube channel at the weekend to find out who actually won, to see all the entries. I have to spend most of tomorrow editing those, which will be fun. But yeah, it's fantastic. A huge number of entries for both competitions, which is great to see. And of course, the winners get paid work from 2000 AD, which is great. So the 2000 AD Encyclopedia is out in February. It's on pre-order now. So I sat down with Scott Montgomery, the writer behind the Encyclopedia, to talk about the challenges of condensing 45 years of the galaxy's greatest comic into one book. Well, I mean, thanks for agreeing to chat about the Encyclopedia. Let's start at the beginning. Tell me a little bit how you came to be involved in the project.
Right. I was just around about early March 2020. And I'd done some articles for Matt Smith before. And I'd done things, I don't know if you're aware of that as well. I did like the Over the Dread Files from David Bishop when he maybe had other projects he wanted to do. So that was quite a while ago, back in 2007. So I've had sort of contact with 2000 AD for quite a while, but on and off through the years, you know, and it was always kind of article type things that I did for them. And so I got back in touch I used to work on Commando and for DC Thompson. So that took up a lot of my time. So I didn't really have a huge amount of freelance work on the go. So I'd kind of lost touch with Matt a little bit and so on. So when I decided to leave Commando 5 years ago and got back, Matt was just trying to get some articles and things like that. And I'd done a couple of them, and then was going to pitch some more around about start of 2020, when Matt just said to me, we're thinking of doing an encyclopedia, would you like to compile it? So I said, yeah, absolutely. Although, don't get me wrong, I have to admit, there was a little bit of trepidation about just the scale of it, you know, and the sort of the responsibility of it. But then I thought, oh, of course, there's no way I can turn this down, you know. So I was delighted to do that. But then out of the blue, lockdown hits. And so it became a bit of a kind of mail back and forth about, you know, just how we're going to do it and all this. So I said, yeah, absolutely, yeah, I'll do it. And then I was just, again, some kind of lucky circumstances that I had the time to be able to devote to it. I was working part-time just 2 days a week. So I had the rest of the week to be able to do the encyclopedia. If I'd had a full-time job, then I wouldn't have time. I think, you know, so very lucky there as well. You know, it's just, you have to ask at the right time. But unfortunately, with lockdown, it became a bit of a sort of, you know, how do you do this? And, you know, how am I going to actually have the resources? So that was one of the reasons why I did it, I worry about it, was a couple of house moves and stuff like that meant, like, unfortunately, you do have to, like, I don't know if you've if that's happened to you, but you have to end up junking a lot of your progs and stuff like that. And
unfortunately, yes.
Yes, yeah. And I was like, oh, well, yeah, I can do this, but I have hardly any resource material, research material. But Matt says, well, we can get around that. You know, there's... he got me a electronic subscription. I was able to sort of basically the last 20 years were covered definitely, so that was okay. And then and then all the collected, luckily with such a big program of collected editions, basically, you know, 90% material was there for me to be able to not worry about not, you know, not having, you know, 2, 3, 5 or whatever to hand or whatever. So yeah, it's kind of as straightforward as that, really. Just basically Matt asked me if I'd like to do it, and after sort of worrying about it a little bit, I said, yeah. And then just got, and the way we got started on it was, having done the Dread Files, I knew that David Bishop had set strong a template for each, say, entry in it, so I thought I have to try and do something similar. So I thought I'll come up with a template, which is, say, fiction, fact, trivia, essential stories, creators. And Matt seemed to like that pretty much right off. And there was just, again, sort of new sample entries. He had some suggestions about maybe change or lose that bit. And then I think we was ready to go to just get started on the mammoth sort of task ahead.
Let's talk about the Dread Files for a moment, because that was a project that ran in the magazine. And it ran for a while, but I mean, it eventually came to an end.
Yeah.
You just tell us a little bit more about that, because that was an interesting proposition from the start. You know, you start at the beginning and describe each Dread story, I guess.
Yeah. As I said, Ogden inherited it from David Bishop. I think it was one of these things that, yeah, that will go on forever. You know, I mean, it was one of these things that doesn't end, you know. But, you know, that can stop keeping work, you know. it was one of those things. When I took over, we decided to streamline it a little bit, just and we took out maybe some of the really minute detail that David had, and we just sort of just tried to make it a little. Perhaps it took less space. You know, I think when the initial run of it was maybe 5 pages or something like that, and when I did it, it was like, say, 3 pages. So we just tried to maybe just streamline it down a little bit, and I think. The experience of that did make me think, well, actually, yeah, I think I can manage to do the encyclopedia if I have a kind of similar approach, obviously tailor it in a way that's going to suit the project itself.
It's one of those things that I think always sounds quite straightforward, you know, Ash Mug. look at the characters, and series, write things down.
Yeah.
But 2000 AD isn't something that's preserved in Aspic. It is something that has changed and evolved over the years. You know, characters pop in and out. Various things, are mentioned and then never mentioned again. Yeah. what were the challenges that you've encountered putting this together?
Right. I think, as you say, if you approach it, obviously the structure of A to Z helps, you know, enormously, because then you kind of know, and especially when it was serialized for the magazine. So I had to deliver basically, you know, A to E, then say F to H or whatever, you know. So, like, I mean, that keeps me focused. That keeps the project from, you know, from yourself going off and on tangents everywhere and stuff like that. But as you say, how do you actually, you know, nail this stuff down? I think initially you have to look at the just look at it chronologically, and so if you're, but, and then you get the things that do become a bit of a nightmare, as you say, that when you're talking about, say, Rogue Trooper, or that, where up until the hit, it had a linear sort of road, you know, but then you start getting into reboots, and then with Friday and all that stuff, it starts to become a bit of a headache. And I'd already actually, again, I'd already tackled that before as well. I did a sort of history of Rogue Trooper for the action special that John Tomlinson did back in 1996. So again, I had the form, if you like, you know, I said, right, okay, well, just approach it in roughly the same way and it should work out okay. And if I've got any queries, just Matt, and then we can work it out between us. But I tried to sort of not bother him with minutiae because obviously he's running to magazines, you know, and and even worse, you know, in lockdown from home, he's like homeschooling and stuff like that. So I couldn't just say, Matt, what about that? You know, what about this? What about that? You know, no, I have to kind of, you know, take responsibility and sort of make sure that I'm kind of responsible and sort of working it out for myself, you know, and not saying, oh, what about this and what about that? So I think it was a matter of just approaching it and reading everything that I can read chronologically, and then just trying to pinpoint, especially where things, when they're non-linear, like say, when Gordon Rennie took over the original Rogue Trooper for the sort of, before the Traitor General died, slotting that, and then I had to be a bit more kind of careful about that and say, right, okay, you have to kind of interweave these together chronologically as best you can. And then and hopefully that still makes sense for people, rather than saying, oh, that happened, no, but before he died, you did this, and you have a kind of awful sort of way of trying to explain things. Does that answer your question?
No. See, my next question was going to kind of focus on that about, you know, you get some series, you named Rogue Trooper there, which are sprawling, you know, and haven't necessarily had a single authorial voice, have jumped and changed. I mean, the 90s period of Rogue Trooper alone is a bit of a quagmire. Has that just been a bit of an outrage, just kind of synthesizing these things down to a few sentences?
Yes, yeah, I think so. I think you just have to sort of somewhere along the line just try and summarize it best you can, hopefully that it makes sense to your average reader, who presumably is a fan, but you're hoping that someone who's just got into 2000 AD, this is the ideal thing for them as well, you know, as well as someone who has been there from 1977 or whatever. So you do have to sort of tackle those details, but in a way that's hopefully not just going to grind people down and confuse. I hope so. I've done that. I've certainly tried to. Yeah.
Were there particular series or characters that weren't covered by the subscription to the app and the collected editions? Who were like, I can't find anything on this, or you know, things were a bit spare.
Things like anything that hasn't really been sort of digitized or redone for, say, magazine floppies and so on. So there was things like, say, if you remember Dry Run, I've forgotten who does it anymore. Kev Hopgood drew it, yeah. So things like that. I mean, but the thing is, I did say to Matt, you know, there's not a lot of material about this. I do remember reading it at the time, and didn't particularly enjoy it. You know, I mean, that's, you know, it's it wasn't a very memorable series, put it that way. So you just try and just do some online research and things like that, and ask Matt if there's anything else that he could, you know, we can look at. Other resources were like, say, TPO, Thrill Power Overload. And you just try to ones like that, you just try and just sum them up in a nutshell if you can, you know, like a brief sort of synopsis of what it was about, rather than the kind of minute detail that I could go into if I had all the material. And we just want to make sure these things were covered. I think Matt wasn't too fussed about Dry Run getting the same kind of like in, let's say, grey area did or something like that. That's okay. I mean, these are curios and one-offs and stuff. We want to mention them, but we don't have to sort of read every page. That's okay. I think that was all right. That was kind of the approach to go, just because we have the deadlines as well that has been serialized. So, you know, we wouldn't have the luxury of, say, once lockdown lifted, I could have doctored and get in and made pages or something like that. And, you know, just wasn't going to happen, you know.
I'd say on a project like this, the sheer amount of reading that has to be done just to get the basics is, when I'm briefly in the office, I can walk into the archive and see all those red books most of the rebellion era isn't even in those red books. You know, we have all the individual progs. So it's quite daunting, actually, when you're trying to do a research-based project on something that's been going for 45 years.
And as you say, it's so much paper, you know, which is great, you know. In terms of the approach, if anyone's interested in how I kind of tackled it on a day-to-day basis, I thought if I could do at least about 1,000 words a day, which isn't very much, I know, but before that though, you have to read. You could tend to be reading 400 pages of, you know, progs for something like I mentioned, Grey Area. That was one I wasn't that familiar with the story, so I had to really read every page basically, and it's great. But I just thought, you know, with some of you can't win these things. You know, you have to. You know, if the material's there and you've got the time to read it, then you really have to read it so that you can nail this down properly. So, I had to kind of work out, let's maybe say 2, possibly 3 entries a day. That's how you could kind of break down into a sort of working day and then work that up over a week. And it managed to fit okay with the deadlines. But there certainly were some days where you just felt that all you did was read all day and you didn't actually write anything. And that's... you know, when you hear people talking about research and stuff like that, you think, well, researching isn't writing, is it? You know,
I think everyone assumes it'd be like a movie montage of you sat there flicking through your books and then you're typing away and nice and busy, but actually,
for 10 seconds,
it can be quite research projects can be quite a grind, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, don't get me wrong, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, there's no way you could possibly go, I've got to read 2000 AD for a year. You know, I mean, that's a dream job, you know, of course. It's fantastic. But it is very kind of sort of time consuming, and you have to sort of, as you say, narrow this down. The research can maybe actually almost get in the way of the writing. Discovered from that, and you can say, well, I've read all this stuff, but if you haven't actually typed a word, then you've basically not done anything in terms of, you know, getting this to the editor. You know what I mean?
Well, you had the stuff going into the Meg supplements over the course of the past year. You mentioned that was good because it gave you structure, it gave you a deadline, but also I imagine the pressure on that is quite major.
Because this is scheduled, so you really kind of I know that you can't just kind of email Matt and say, actually, oh, I've missed that deadline. Is that okay? You know, sometimes when you read 2000 AD, histories and stuff like that, you do see things where that seems to have happened, where an artist has sort of taken too long to do pages or whatever, or writer hasn't sort of delivered scripts the way they were meant to be or stuff. And then somehow, like, because it's a weekly comic, they'll find something else to bridge that gap or whatever. But when you're sort of solely doing this, you really have to take the responsibility and just try to work in the schedule and the deadlines, which I did manage to do. I mean, I think, as I said, breaking it down into that sort of daily help, and also as well, there would be days where I would do more than that and so on, you know. But I think I would try to, and once I got started, I think once I delivered the first sort of the installment, I thought, right, okay, I think that's what I need to do, just keep doing it in that way. So I think it was a bit of a sort of learning curve initially, after doing, like, say, the A to E's and so on. I think once I'd done that, and once I got the feedback from Matt as well, that he was quite happy with it. Apart from, I did start to stray. It's quite difficult as I start to get into maybe doing critiques rather than, the situation reports. Usually should be more about sort of this artist did this after moving on from such a project or whatever. Then you start to, and sometimes you can't help yourself. I think you start saying, well, story name omitted was rubbish, basically, and Matt kind of did sort of come back to me and say, well, that may well have been rubbish, but this is not the place for that. So we, this is a sort of resource, and I knew that myself. I think it's just sometimes you can't help it. It's just your own instincts and your own sometimes memories of a story maybe sometimes get in the way, and you have to be a bit more objective about it. So all those things were all learning curves along the way, I think,
It was always one of the nice bits of feedback I had on the 2080 ABC videos when people, it's actually really nice to hear you, voice an opinion about this. And I tried to not do it as much, but sometimes you read something, you go, I've got to say something about this. I can't let this go past.
Well, I think, in fact, I can also maybe say probably influenced by yourself on that as well, because obviously I did watch all the ABCs too. It makes doing that. Yeah, I think there was a little bit of that, to be honest. So, and I thought, Mick's voice and his opinion, maybe I should do the same. And then it was like, no. No, probably not. I need to say thanks to you for sort of helping on some of those stories as well. So it's just something you just need a starting point, the ABCs were a great resource for that as well.
I need to finish those at some point. It's difficult to do them when working from home, to be honest with you.
Well, of course you don't. Again, it's roughly the same idea. You don't have access to the physical pages and so on.
One question I did want to ask is, what's really noticeable is that on select strips, particularly Judge Dredd, you've broken out specific characters. So everything else is series based, but then on specific ones, you go like Aaron A. Aardvark and Judge Cal, and recognizable ones. What was the decision process behind that? Because obviously that's treating strips differently. I know what the obvious answer is. It's Judge Dredd, so why wouldn't you? But it kind of, it creates a level of granular detail for that you're not necessarily getting for the other one. So I wonder what the thought process behind that was.
That one, I think it was part of my initial brief, really, was like all the series in 2000 AD and the magazine, but he did also say significant supporting characters as well. Now that did, I did have to admit, I was like, well, that could be make it even more tricky. If it was just series, fair enough. But, it's a good challenge, but then you do come to the point there where you just have to make a decision on it and think, we'll get the kind of the memorable, as you say, Judge Cal, that's an obvious one. The Dark Judges, there's loads of Dark Judges in there, and that was one of those, the big sprawling ones, where it's just, there's more and more material as you, the Fall of Dead World and all that stuff, and it just seems to be never ending. But I love trying to tie in even more stuff. I love trying to put even more into it. But in terms of so as it was, it was really part of Matt's brief was to have important characters as well. I think I just had to, what I did use as a the architecture of the whole project really is Barney, the online database. Barney has got lots of supporting characters on there as well. So definitely just had to use that really as a sort of like the structure on which the could sort of hang on, or else I think I would have been there. The deadlines would have been missed, And it was like, what obscure character can you get from, Quantum Dogs or something like that, the spin-off from spin-off and so on. So I just kind of had to I did use Barney as a sort of basis for it. And then where I thought it was justified, we could use, maybe say someone like, say, Judge Smiley or whatever. But as you say, the Dread Worlds, lent itself more naturally to the supporting characters. I tried to sort of use people from, say, like Nicolai Dante or Sinister Dexter, you know, the big ongoing series that had a significant kind of supporting cast. And it was just a matter of kind of picking and choosing those people. And then just to try and cap it there, if you know what I mean. That was like, we have to stop somewhere.
So, you know, as I said, 2000 AD is constantly changing, constantly evolving. And even since the magazine supplement started, there's been new series that have debuted that don't have, you know, didn't have entries in the magazine, but do have entries in the actual encyclopedia book. What was the cutoff point for that?
Really just timing, to be honest. I think I actually submitted my last part of the serialized version at the end of March 2021. So and then the book version was really imminent after that. So I just did my best to get some of the more recent sort of regenes in there, like, say, Action Packed and Mayflies. And so I did a little appendix at the end of the final serialized version. But beyond that, there just really wasn't the scope to add even more, you know. But yeah, there's probably even already, say, two or three new series or something like that. So really that was the cut-off point. It was just end of March, and we just did a quick sort of tidy up of anything that I wanted to fix for the book version of it. And then really it was expressed thereafter.
Because has there been a process of going back over the entries that you'd already done after they appeared in the Meg, just to, you know, tidy things up or you know, account for things that hadn't made it in?
Yeah, there was a couple of things that I just wanted to reword slightly. One was on Judge Bruce, and I just got a little confused myself about the timeline of, because he appeared in a one-off appearance in Skiz 3. I thought I wanted to tidy that up properly and have it make more sense. So things that I knew, I thought, I probably could have maybe worded that a bit better. To be honest, it was really kind of minor sort of corrections. I just think we just didn't have the time to do a major sort of overhaul of the whole manuscript itself. I think it was pretty sound, you know what I mean? It was all sort of, it was as up to date as it could be at that time. You know, I think because the book version is coming, you know, not long after it's just finished in the magazine, there really there wasn't a huge amount of time to sort of go through the whole lot and tinker with it, which, I mean, I probably would have quite liked that, but I think that way madness lies was probably just as well we did. But certainly, yeah, of course, we did look at things to see if there's anything we want to fix. But there was very, very minor things.
Is there a series or a character that this process has introduced you to and has become a favourite? Is there something where you've got, actually, I really like this, hadn't known about it or hadn't paid attention to it before?
Yeah, I have to admit as well, there has been a few years where I sort of got out of the way of reading 2000 AD as well, and that was from about 2013, 2015. I just sort of, again, with, like, say, house moves and stuff, you get rid of all the stuff, unfortunately, and you sort of lose, you know, you don't keep up with it. So one that I did mention again earlier was Grey Area, and I thought, having, you know, read it from cover to cover, basically, it was just that one really stayed with me. I thought it was a great story, and sort of political element was sort of very nicely handled, you know, and even just the title itself was just sort of indicative of what it was all about, and I just thought that was a really great idea and superbly drawn and so on, and obviously coming back right up to date as well, and it's just something like that. It just seemed to just sort of hit the moment, didn't it? You know, it was all about sort of we're in lockdown, but this is about what it would be like to just be free to roam the, you know, the universe and so on. So things like that. Well, there's loads, you know. It's great to sort of revisit things that I loved when I started reading 2000 AD at the age of 9 in 1981. So that was just right at the time that Ace Truck and Go started. It was like the next week. It was like episode one of Ace Trucking, and that was just great to have a look at that again, thoroughly enjoy just how mad it was, you know what I mean? But and also it was sort of it was quite, it had a nice light touch to it. So it wasn't all sort of, you know, death and violence and stuff like that. And yeah, so it was great to be, the nostalgic stuff was great as well. Because you sort of you look back at that time in 1981, it was like an apocalypse, you know, lot mania, apocalypse war. Then you've got Strontium Dogs absolutely at the top of its game. Nemesis the Warlock, Road Trooper just started. So you've got, that's a real kind of, as they say, they called it like the golden era or something like that. And yeah, I think it was, you know. And so it's great to revisit all that stuff. And then it's nice to find some new great stuff as well. And I do remember reading Zombo at the time and thoroughly enjoying it. And it was great just to sort of look through all those again, just to sort of remind myself. And yeah, I mean, I think some of the comedy series are actually really quite well done. I think Dandridge, it was great to rediscover that. I feel that, you know, that's in its later series. Stories eventually, you know, there were really some very funny stuff in there. I think that's a classic that people would sort of maybe want to revisit if they, you know, if they read the entry on it or something like that. So I think, yeah, I think that's it's great to rediscover some things. Also, I reread Skiz and was shed a tear at the end of the first book and stuff like that, you know. So stuff like that just shows you how good it was, you know.
Because I guess the difficulty with a book like this is it needs to appeal to both the hardcore fandom, yeah, who will know an awful lot of it already, if not all of it, but also to not casual readers, but people who aren't necessarily steeped in the lore. And that, and that's quite a tightrope to walk, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I hope I've managed to kind of have a foot in both camps, if you know what I mean. I think I'm always wary that I do wonder sometimes that I was concerned that I was like spoiling all these stories for people, you know, like, because I'm explaining everything that happens in them, you know, like, well, no need to read any of them since he's going to spoil it all. But I don't think so. I think, I mean, hopefully there's just enough in certain aspects, or rather, there's just enough, or else it just can't be avoided. You know, if you're going to do an entry on the dead man, then you have to know who, what, you know, what the identity is. Well, I'll try not to spoil it, you know. So, but I do it in the book, you know. So, yeah, I think it obviously has to please long-term fans. But at the same time, I think it really does have to appeal to people who are new fans. Maybe they've got into it through Regenes, which is that it's remit. So it has to appeal to them as well. And hopefully I've managed to try and sort and all those plates and make it, you know, make it in a way that's appealing to everyone. Obviously, you're not gonna please everyone. I maybe just have to accept that, but I want to.
All right. So one of the things that's been really fascinating has been watching the editors and the designers kind of working away at this busy little worker ants. And driving themselves mad but doing, you know, doing a great job to fit the sheer amount of information into the space. I mean, you know, that's a task kind of almost equivalent to having done the writing in the first place, you know?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I was absolutely gobsmacked at how much, you know, amazing work that all the designers and the editors as well have done. But I would say particularly the designers, because as you say, they have to like find this relevant material and put it together and then make it appealing to the eye. You know, I mean, I think it's just they did just an astounding job, and I can't thank them enough, because I've never even met them or had an email from them. You know, you feel, you know, when you're freelance like that, you are quite detached from the process. So all I had to do is just fire off some work and worry about that part of it. So it was really, really great, and I can't thank them enough, and also Matt and Olivia, who edited the book version as well. So yeah, great job from all of them. It's really great to see the finished product. Yeah.
great. Well, thank you so much to Scott for that. Now, as I said at the beginning, it's Thought Bubble this weekend, and we've got a couple of teasers about the talent search panels that we run every year. Now, there are a number of creators who've come through these and actually got regular work with 2018, which is fantastic. So it's an opportunity to put people through their paces, whether they're submitting a pitch for a future shock, or whether they're submitting artwork from a sample script for the art competition. We have already chosen the winners, having done the panels earlier today. But you'll have to wait until the weekend. But this is an opportunity just to hear from our judges about what their expectations are for this weekend's Thought Bubble talent search panels. So it's great to welcome Maura, Ram and Oliver, who are the judges for the 2000 AD Thought Bubble Script Talent Search 2021. I mean, first off, thanks all three of you for agreeing to be this year's judges. It's been quite a process of sifting through these. We had, I think it was over 107 entries.
Excellent.
Which is an all-time high. So, you know, great. Thank you to everybody who put in their pitches. I wanted to give, ahead of the actual judging panel this weekend as part of Thought Bubble, I wanted to give people a taster of kind of what we're looking for, what people can expect. Because, Maura, you've been a judge before on the panel, haven't you?
Yeah, last year.
Yeah, so I wanted to get an idea of you know, what you're looking for in one of these four-page stories. So, Maura, looking back on last year, what was your overriding feeling about the pitches that we had?
Well, first off, I always think how brave people are to do this, actually, because not only are you putting together a written pitch, you're also sending a video pitch, which is really difficult and actually not really what writers often do, to certainly the video part. So I commend all of them for the bravery of doing that and putting yourself forward. I mean, we all have projection when we're writers. All of us have had it. So, you know, of the 100 and, you know, plus people who submitted, you know, we're bringing it down to, what is it, 5? So that's, you know, that's a lot of disappointed people. I would just say keep writing. But main thing is you're looking for a full story. And because it's future shocks, something with perhaps hopefully a bit of a twist or a turn, and with interesting characters and something I actually really like if it's fun, not some, you know, dour. There's a lot of sort of very serious stuff. So and variety and inventiveness, you know, simple stuff to get into 4 pages.
No pressure.
Yeah.
Well, Ram, I mean, this is your first time on the panel.
Yeah.
Future shocks. I know I've seen particularly writers who've come up to American comics and have 22 pages a month to play with. When they first hear about future shocks, their jaws drop and they kind of go a bit white and sweaty at the idea of compressing a story like this.
Right.
What's your feelings about the future shock as a format?
I think it's great. And I think, frankly, if you don't know how to compress story, then you're missing, you know, some tools in your toolbox. I think the era of decompressed storytelling is certainly predominant today in American comics, but, you know, at least my work, you know, is generally known for, you're like, oh, I read 20 pages, but it feels like I've read way more story than that in the span of 20 pages. And part of that is visual compression, part of that is narrative compression. And so if you don't know how to do that, then you're certainly missing part of the narrative toolkit. And I think future shocks, short stories, even thinking of, I mean, I generally tend to think of my scenes as 4-page stories, even within a 22-page book. And so I think reading and trying to write my own future shocks at home was certainly an important part of the exercise. So I'm quite excited to see what people have come up with.
Well, I'm curious. Did you ever try to picture a Future Shock through the open submissions?
No, I didn't. Partly because I think the first year I considered doing that is when like the pitching process moved into the Thought Bubbles kind of big festival. Right. You come in and pitch here. And as Maura was saying before, like, I'm not brave enough to pitch anything on video. So if you're not looking at my you know, one page, 500 word pitch, then you know, too bad.
Brilliant. Oliver, graphic novel editor at Rebellion. When we think back to the classic Future Shocks, you know, the Alan Moores, the Pete Milligans, the John Smiths, et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes it can feel like they're so perfect, they're so nicely done. But of course, this is a rite of passage for a lot of writers, isn't it?
Yeah. I think something you have to remember is that not every Future Shock Alan Moore wrote was Chronocops. He only wrote one Chronocops. And Future Shocks were in so many progs, and many of them are good, but they're not perfect. I remember Al Ewing saying in an interview when he was starting writing that he couldn't imagine himself writing Watchmen, but he could imagine himself writing a bad Alan Moore Future Shock. And if you're starting that off, that's what you're aiming for. You know, you want to, you know, at least try and write a four-page story that builds, each page builds on the last page, ending in a quirky twist that, is, that, as Maura says, has a sense of humor, a sense of fun that keeps you interested. Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, I'm looking forward to the entries for this year's Thought Bubble, which will be revealed on the weekend of the show on the YouTube channel for Thought Bubble. So good luck, everyone, and yeah, to the judges, because it's not an envious task to go through these. So, yeah, it should be fun. So we now have a different set of judges for the Thought Bubble Art Competition, which is happening this weekend alongside the Script Talent Search. And we have three judges, two artists and one graphic novel editor, but is also a comic book creator in their own right. We've got Olivia Hicks.
Hello.
We've got Dougie Braithwaite. Hey. And we've got Leanna Kangas.
Hey.
So the format of the art competition is much the same. People have drawn pages from a sample script and sent them through. Mathag the Mighty has chosen five finalists, and we're going to go through and decide who gets paid work with 2000 AD. Leanna, what are the kind of things that you look for when you find a new artist, when you're looking to find a new artist? What are the things that really stand out to you?
Yeah, I think style, like a unique style, because comics medium is such a, you know, vast, you know, thing. Unique style and seamless storytelling is pretty important. And I think those are my main two. The, you know, I see it when I see it, I guess, which is the hard part.
Dougie, I mean, you started your career with 2080 back in the late 80s, 89. What were the, and this is where Olivia pipes up and mentions that she wasn't even born then. what did you learn in those early days from being at 2080, and what are your expectations coming into to this judging?
I learned a lot. You had some great professionals that were very encouraging to me. And, you know, I wasn't afraid of asking questions from, you know, if there's something that really confused me, you know, I wouldn't be afraid to ask. And they actually expected me to, you know, they wanted to see me come up to them, ask some questions, you know. So, and, you know, I'd expect that of any young upcoming artists to do the same thing. You know, don't be afraid to ask the professionals if you get the opportunity to, you know, because most of them are very accommodating, to you know, just pick their brains, you know, and hopefully they'll be able to pass stuff on to you. But yeah, I started pretty young and I was very raw. But as I said, I had good people around me, and they encouraged me and made me feel like it was a profession that I wanted to stay in. So, yeah.
And what are your expectations of what we're going to see today?
Well, I'm like Liana said, I'm looking for somebody who's, you know, got a very individual kind of voice, style. Somebody could tell the story very clearly, and somebody sticks to the brief. We've all seen the script, and I think it's a very quite a sophisticated story, you know, in 6 pages. So there's a lot of information there that they're going to have to try and absorb and kind of put across to the reader. So this is what I'm looking for, and hopefully we'll find somebody who could do that.
Brilliant. And Olivia, I mean, you're producing your own comics while also working at Rebellion as a junior graphics novel editor. Is this the kind of thing that that you relish or dread?
Looking at other people's artwork, I love looking at other people's artwork. Okay. I think. No, I hate looking at art. That's why I'm in
never
comics.
Know. That's why I asked.
No, I think like Doug and Liana said, I'm looking for something individual that makes me want to know more. It doesn't necessarily have to be like the most anatomically correct story, like style. It just has to be interesting and dynamic and make me want to read more of it. I think if the style's interesting, then I'm not going to be like, well, the perspective was a little bit off in the back of that panel, because I think to me, I'm more interested in like the style and the individuality and the charisma of the art, if I can be really pretentious. And I think we're looking, yeah, I agree. We're looking for somebody who can tell the story really clearly. I think I also like, as a lazy writer, I like artists who can elevate the script. So artists who are like, trying to thinking like that extra level and bringing something else and bringing another thing to that script that a novel is, because they're also telling the story. So like, you know, seeing their storytelling chops as well in things that maybe is missed off in the script or isn't the script, and they're bringing that on. So I think that's also what I would be looking for.
Well, super to hear from all of those judges, and I think they made the right decisions in the end for the panels, but like I said, you'll have to wait until this weekend. Enjoy Thought Bubble for those of you who are going. Do make sure you stay safe, but have a good time. We should be back in 2 weeks' time for more from the greatest podcast in the galaxy. So until then, Earthlets, stay safe, take care of one another, and Splendid Verthrig.
Alert! 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 Full power levels dangerously high. Alert! Alert! Be 2000 AD every week. Ask your comic book store or newsagent now. Subscribe to the galaxy's greatest comic at 2000adonline.com.